of homes and shit, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Mic yeah. check, mic check. What's up, my people? This is Rants with Riv, and I don't say the episode anymore, but we have Chris Mara. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Chris Mara in the building, and this is so cool, man. You've been doing stand-up for how long?
Like 5 or 6 years.
Okay, that's way longer than me, but we met doing open mics at Dead Crow, and then funny story is we just kept I remember we would like briefly talk, and then we got to know each other the more we were doing open mics, and it turns out that I one of my friends from Long Island, New York. Talk about a small fucking world, man. How did that come about?
How did I meet Dan
so I guess we'll go back. You were on, I guess you saw me on Facebook because we had a mutual friend.
Well, yeah, here's what happened. So at Dead Crow, I saw that good looking girl come up to you and say, "You're the guy with the podcast." And I was like, I got to get on the podcast. So you can go on. I looked at your profile and I saw that Dan followed you, and I was like, get the fuck out of here.
That's crazy.
So I texted him, and yeah, there you go.
And then, here we are doing the podcast, and it's just crazy how small of a world it is. And you met Dan when you were at Syracuse.
Yeah, he actually,
Shout out to Dan, if you're listening. I won't say your last name, but shout out, you're the homie. Would love to have you in North Carolina. We can get drunk and do a podcast, and that would be amazing. Thank you for listening, but yeah, proceed.
Yeah, man. So yeah, Dan, a year above me at Syracuse, and we played rugby together. And since we were both forwards, we, you know, hung out a lot and practiced together a lot. So, good dude. Have a lot of stories with him playing rugby. But yeah, no, it's crazy how that shit happens, man.
Yeah, dude, you were telling me before the podcast, the first time you met him, he gave you a black eye in practice.
Yeah, he. So it was a non-contact drill. We were going just running through the motions there, and he didn't get the memo, and he just went full speed at me, and I'm a big dude and he's bigger than me, and he gave me a black eye. So during freshman orientation, I'm trying to meet everyone in the dorm, and no one wanted to talk to me just because all he knew was, I'm Chris, I'm from Philly, I play rugby, and my eye is basically swollen shut. So welcome to college, right?
That's awesome. So what was it? Well, I guess we'll start with Syracuse. What was it like going to Syracuse? Did you know, like, from high school, was that a school you always wanted to go to, or how did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, I knew I always wanted to go to a D1 school just because I was a sport management major. So, I just always loved Syracuse because they're orange and they're different and they're all the way up there.
That's upstate New York, right?
Yeah, it's a shithole up there, but it's cold. But yeah, I applied and got in, and it's kind of just like, it worked out. They have a good sport management program, so it was a good time. Good party school.
Yeah, dude, I think it's actually, like, every year it gets ranked one of the, like, at least top 10 party schools in the nation, like, every single year.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me because obviously I didn't go there, but I feel like it's always snowing there. Like, how could it be such a big party school? Or maybe that's why.
Exactly. That's the only way to get through it is the fireball and the hot chocolate, you know? So, yeah.
Did you, like, a lot of people, like, snowboard and shit over there, or not really?
I mean, there was, like, a snowboarding club, but, like, yeah, I mean, there were some mountains up there. The closest thing I ever did to snowboarding is you'd get drunk, and because the campus was so hilly, it was a street called Clarendon Road, and you'd just get on the lid of a trash can and just fucking go.
Dude, that's awesome.
So, yeah.
Did you, do you guys have, like, I guess lacrosse is huge there, too, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's, every year, they're top five program, because upstate New York is where the sport was founded, so all the Native Americans are still chilling up there playing. Yeah. So yeah.
That's awesome, man. And then, how'd you get into rugby?
Well, so I always played sports growing up. Obviously, I wasn't going to be able to play. My high school didn't have a football team, so I didn't play football for years. And I didn't want to. Syracuse is a huge, Greek life is huge there.
Yeah.
And one thing my friends will tell you about me is if I hate anything in this world, it's Greek life. I think it's the fucking stupidest thing. but I still wanted to have, like, a group of friends and felt like I was competing for something. So it kind of just happened. And I think Dan's actually the one who reached out to me originally to come play. And the rest is history. And I, you know, fell in love with the good dudes and still some of my best friends today. So,
dude, my so I have a friend, Karsten. He played rugby at NC State, and he actually told me this statistic, which once you, I mean, I don't know, I thought it was really interesting, but he said there's actually far less concussions in rugby than in football, because if you think about it, like rugby, there's no pads, so you're not going to lead with your head in rugby. Right. Whereas, like, when you have a helmet on, everyone leads with their head for whatever reason. And I never really thought about it, but that, to me, I thought that was really interesting because rugby's such a physical sport.
Yeah, I mean, I had 5 or 6 concussions,
oh,
so
really?
I can't. Yeah, I'm. Yeah,
all from rugby.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, you have to properly tackle, because if you don't, you, like, you'll break your neck. So, it's, yeah, and it's not as fast paced. It's a lot. It's, the pacing's more like soccer. Honestly, it's really soccer where you have to tackle the guy with the ball. That's pretty much it.
Now, I've never had a concussion. So, is a concussion one of those things where, like, once you get one, it's easier to get another one? Or
yeah, I believe so. And as soon as it happened, like the first concussion I had, I wasn't sure. I was just kind of like in a daze, my head hurt, but you fucking know, dude, like it happens. And you know, I never forget the one I got. I blacked out on the field and I woke up and actually Dan was standing above me calling the ref over because I completely blacked out.
Oh,
and
man.
Yeah, the lights went out in Georgia, man. So
did you, like, how do you, do you just kind of like sit in darkness to get over that, or?
You're supposed to. I mean, I'm in college, man.
Yeah,
so like, I'm like, ah, I'll be fine. But yeah, there's nothing you can do. You just have to rest and just wait. So.
So then, you obviously, we do stand up. So were you also doing stand up when you were in college too?
Not as much as I was doing it out of college, because I mean, I'm in college on a Friday, Saturday night, and I'm gonna, you know, be drinking with the boys in the dark basement. But I was still writing, and like, I guess, I mean, you've seen a couple of my sets. Like, I'm a storyteller, so
yeah, definitely.
Obviously, I'm making stories, and I'm still writing, so I still have a lot of material from college. But I wasn't performing as much. Like, if I was gonna perform more consistently, it was when I was going home in Philly and kind of just doing the mics there.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about it before, but I just want to talk about it again on the podcast. Like, doing stand-up in Philly must have been like bananas, because you're performing, I mean, there's savages in the crowd everywhere. We've seen some savages at Dead Crow, but like, I can't imagine the savages in Philly.
First time I did stand-up, I was at Helium Comedy Club in Philly, and Helium's like one of the, it's, there's, you have to put your name on a list a long time in advance. It was Tuesday nights just to have a chance to perform. First time I went, my teacher told me to go. He's the one who got me into comedy, but I went, and everyone bombs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you fucking,
unless you're fucking Kevin Hart or like Eddie Murphy.
Even they, like when they started, I'm sure they fucking bombed.
Sure.
I get off and I'm sitting there and I'm just, I wanted to leave and I was getting ready to leave, and this ginger in a green turtleneck comes up to me and goes, "Hey, man." And I'm like, okay, he seems nice. And he goes, "You are so bad that I'm gonna fuck your entire family and I'm gonna make you watch."
Oh my God. A stranger said that to you?
Yeah.
Did you punch him in the face?
No, dude, I'm not.
You were just like, whatever?
I'm not aggressive. And I was just like, and I could feel like, not that I was gonna cry, but my eyes were getting puffy and I was like, fuck this, man. Like, this was terrible. But
dude, if you think about it, like, that's such an act, cause like, I'm at the point, especially when you go through bombing, like, you know what it is. Like, that's the last thing you would wanna say to someone. So especially the fact that he said that to you after, like, I mean, I guess he didn't know what, like, dude, when you bomb, at least for me, like, it mentally, like, fatigued.
Yeah,
it fatigues you.
Let me ask you, so you did stand up for the first time recently, right?
My first set at Dead Crow was probably about 6 weeks ago.
Okay, yeah, so you're
brand new.
So, but I bet, even though, and I didn't see it, I'm not gonna assume you bombed, but I'm assuming
bombed.
Okay,
yeah, for
great.
Sure.
Awesome. So you probably felt like you could fucking do anything now, right? So like, I think everyone should try to do stand up at least once, because once you do that and you bomb, you're like, there's nothing, there is no worse feeling.
Oh, for sure.
Than that. So yeah, I think everyone should do it.
Well, I always tell people, even though I'm only 6 weeks in, I can already tell. It makes, regardless as if you do good on stage or bad on stage, my entire day-to-day life is so much easier. Wouldn't you say the same thing?
I mean, you're still in college, so that's kind of bullshit.
Yeah, no, you're right. But okay, so for me, like, no, but all right. So I've worked, so like last summer, I worked 40 hours a week in a cubicle, you know, typical job. But it was like, now what I know now, I mean, I hope this doesn't sound cocky, but it's like when you do stand up and you go through that and it's like, oh, now you want me to give a sales pitch? Like, you know what I'm saying? Shit like that just seems weird. Or like, you know, people talk, or like, let's say you're at a bar. Like, remember when you were in high school and you were like, you saw a girl that you liked and you're like, oh shit, like, well, I don't know what to say. And it's like, now that we do stand up, it's like, who fucking cares? Say anything. You know what I'm saying? All so right, that's well, what
if,
I think.
If you have any tips, man, like, talking to women, let me know. I get it. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, obviously I have a sales background too, so that definitely helps being told no. Right. But I think everyone should do it. And I'm sure you've talked to people and they're like, I could never get up there and do it. But the first time you get up there, your legs are weak, but you just fucking do it. And each time it gets easier, and then you get better at it. And you, even though you're doing the same routine, you get your cadence down, and finally someone laughs and it's just like, holy shit.
God, makes up for everything.
Exactly. So. Yeah, absolutely.
For me, I remember, well, even still this happens, dude, especially if I'm talking about something I haven't, like new material or something. I remember the first step that I learned is your nerves are so high, at least my nerves, at least my first time on stage, it was like, it doesn't matter how much you rehearse, like you're gonna draw blank. Like, and sure enough, like I just drew, you just draw, but your adrenaline is so high. And it's weird, man.
I still have problems when I make eye contact with people. Like I try, even though it's dark, like you're really close to these people. Sometimes I'll make, especially with a girl, if I make eye contact with a girl, and
throws your shit off.
I'm mad enough to admit this. I'm like, well, fuck. And you're lucky though, because like you're a good looking dude.
Oh, stop it.
No, but no, it's true. Like it's funny. Like it's the same group of people outside Dead Crow. When everyone's like talking about their anxiety medication and smoking cigarettes, and I look around and I'm like, for the first time ever, I'm probably like the best looking guy in the room. And then I walked in and saw you at Bombers, and I was like, God fucking.
Like, oh my God.
I'm not even like 1% gay, but I think I have to fuck you.
Dude, you know what's funny, man? All right, I'm going to tell a story. So there's a guy. So we did a set at Bombers, and I got off stage, and we walked outside, and he gave me notes or whatever. And I guess he said something. He was like, yeah, man, you're probably like swimming in it, right? And I was like, no, dude, I'm not. And everyone was like, no, wait, what? And I'm like, no, dude, yeah. Like everyone thinks I get laid all the time, and I don't.
See, that's okay. I was thinking about this in the shower earlier today. I did want to tell you how good looking you are. Like, I'm not kidding. Like you, I'm not even a little bit gay, but I would. I think if I had, like, if you wanted to have sex with me, I don't think I'd be able to say no just because you'd be the trophy on my. But like a guy like you, I've never understood a guy like you. You don't have to do anything. Like me, I understand I'm like a niche for some women. Like not everyone likes the big guys and everything, but like you can just show up.
Do you really think so?
Yeah, dude, you're wearing a hoodie and like pants right now. I'm honestly like shocked that I thought, especially here in Wilmington, like.
Dude, that's so funny that I have been rejected so many times. Damn. I think it's so funny. I remember we were in Raleigh, and I met this girl, and I mean, it was, I'm not gonna lie, like we hit it off immediately. And I remember she was like, yeah, come to this bar. And none of my friends wanted to go out. So I just went to this bar and I was like, all right. And she was there with all of her friends, dude. And she just left. And I was there alone, and I had to take an Uber home alone. And I told all my friends, and they were like, you're a complete idiot. But
what's her name?
Oh, I can't say her name on the podcast.
What's her name?
No, I can't do it.
What's her name?
Wait, why?
I don't know.
Should I make up a fake name?
No.
No.
Just mouth it to me. What is it?
Yeah, that was good. That was really good. Yeah. Really? We're gonna have to make some edits.
Dude, that's fucking, that's bullshit.
No, yeah, why would you do that? You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's fucked up.
Would you tell me to come to a bar?
Yeah.
But, so then what else? Yeah, we're just doing stand up, and I'm trying to look at my notes. We, Well, before you worked for the Sixers,
yeah,
doing sports management. That sounds sick, dude. And you were saying before the podcast started, we were talking about like doing what you love, and you were basically saying, do not do what you love. And I'm going to let you elaborate on
that. Okay, so I don't want to obviously like do what you, and like I got to where I am today because of the mistakes I made, but like my first job out of college was working in the ticket sales department for the Philadelphia 76ers during the process of the team's intentionally losing. So, I mean, in terms of learning how to sell, I learned how to, without a doubt, learned how to sell. And like that on my resume still, recruiters are still like coming at me and, you know, that's great experience, things like that. But my salary was $16,000 in Philly, which is expensive to live in. So like, you were telling me about this job that, you know, you weren't thrilled about necessarily, but the salary was good. Like, fucking do that, man.
Oh,
like,
yeah, for sure.
I'm finally getting to a place financially where, like, I can, like, afford to, like, you know, order live Jimmy John's. You know, like, that's the little things for
right.
me. But, like, yeah, dude, I don't... Unless you're really passionate about something, I feel like you can always come back to it, honestly.
Well, especially like, I think whatever you're passionate about that you can make time for. So if you have, if you work 8 to 5 and like us, we like doing stand up. I have a podcast and shit.
Dude, you already said this. I listened to your podcast. I did my research.
There you go, dude.
This. Yeah. If you work 8 to 5, you got to make time from 6 to 10
this
or 6 to 10.
Man did his research.
Yeah. No. Yeah. But that's the thing though. Like I was miserable in Philly and because I couldn't afford I couldn't even afford Yingling. I had to drink Old German.
Oh,
like,
man.
Yeah. So, like, that's when I got into stand-up, and I could anonymously do comedy, and that's kind of how it just happened. So, yeah, I mean...
Let's talk about... I think you touched briefly. You said, I think when we were talking about Syracuse, you said... Did you have a teacher that told you to do stand-up or someone told you to do stand-up?
No. So his name's Tony Fiola, and I owe this guy the world. I had his class when I was 15 in high school. It was his communications class, and he was our like forensics, which is like debate and public speaking coach in high school. And every year my high school won the state and like went to the national title. It's like a bunch of nerds that learned how to talk.
Right.
And that's, but yeah. And I was one of those guys who thought he was funny in class and everything. And then he told me when I was 15, you're going to be on Comedy Central one day. And I was like, all right, dude, like, fuck you, whatever. But no.
Interesting response.
But it stuck with me because I was always interested in comedy. And he finally got me to do it. And
yeah.
I sent him the video from that I did Dead Crow last week. And he said, you're getting so smooth. And he still gives me feedback on it. So like that's, yeah. So he's the one who actually got me into it. I got into it later than what he recommended, but yeah, I mean, I owe him everything.
Yeah, man, it's weird. It's weird making that transition from like, I guess me and you were in the same boat. Like I knew I was going to do it for years, but there's some, once you make that switch, it's like everything changes.
Yep.
So, I want to talk about, your material. You were talking about, you have a lot of jokes about like suicide and things like that.
Jesus. Okay.
But, I don't know how to bring this up. There's like I'll let you take it from there. How did all this come about?
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to be fucking weird about it, dude. Like, okay.
Well, it's just such... Okay, not for you, but for some people, it's like a very touchy thing.
But I don't think it should be, though.
I agree.
Because it was my dad. So when I was 10, my dad fucking killed himself. And it was... Obviously, that sucks. And it has its impact today. But, like, I think it made me look at suicide in a different... And like, I remember I was 10 at my dad's funeral telling jokes at the reception. It wasn't, or not the the reception or whatever, not the recession. But, you know, I was obviously not doing stand-up, but, like, that's how I...
That was your way of coping with it.
Yeah, that's how I deal with it. Like, I'm 10, man. I'm a man. I don't want people to, you know, see me crying. But that's... I've always just looked at... And if I can look at suicide as, like, this light topic, like, to me, there's nothing that can't be joked about.
Right.
And which I think is a problem for comedians nowadays, is people are pulling up shit from 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think this is by far the hardest time to ever do stand up.
Yeah, but I also think it's a huge opportunity because like if you are able to be dark and still not get bitched at too much, then you know, that's what you have to do. And yeah, I mean, I love dark humor. Like, I did a show in Chapel Hill, and in terms of laughter, I bombed, but like most of the people were just like shocked. Like, I could, the lights were on and I could see all the girls, were just like, this guy's an asshole.
Right.
And all the guys were like, this guy's hilarious. And
right.
They were laughing. So, yeah.
You know what it reminds me of, man? So, I mean, I'm sure you know who Pete Davidson is.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Everyone's like, dude, you're just like Pete Davidson.
No, but you're not like Pete Davidson. But it's, because I don't think you're like him in any way, but he does a good job of, dude, his dad died in 9/11.
Right.
It's like, that is traumatizing. And I think the only similarities you two have is you two have the same way of coping with things. It's like, his dad died in 9/11, and he has like 30 minutes of material about it. And he doesn't give a fuck what you think. And dude, I'm not gonna lie, I saw the jokes. They're fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's like, you should, why do we as a society feel uncomfortable to laugh at that shit?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a reason that knock knock jokes and why did the chicken cross the road, there's a reason that that shit isn't actually funny. It's because it's the first layer of the onion.
Right.
And I think there's a great HBO special, it's called Talking Funny.
Oh, I saw that with Louis C.K. Chris Rock.
And he talks about and like, yeah, like for me, I'm really self-conscious about my size. I'm a big guy. I've always been the big guy. But I also find a lot of humor in the fact that, you know, I like to walk around Destination XL just because I'm the small guy. Like,
right.
The deeper you go into like your fears and what makes you sad is like, that's the shit that's funny. Cause anyone can tell a knock knock joke.
Right.
But Marissa, who had an eating disorder when she was, you know, in sixth grade or seventh grade and isn't able to talk about it and joke about it, like she, you know, if you can't talk about that and like confront those feelings, that's what separates the comedians from the people in the crowd, is the people that can relate to what, you know, I'm sure people had lost their parents at a young age too, and that's why they might be able to laugh at what Pete Davidson said, but that's why he's the guy on the stage and they're the people in the crowd.
Right, for sure. That's interesting that you said you're self-conscious about your size, because I'm a small dude, and from my perspective, I think, dude, I think it's cool about your size, because think about it from my perspective. Dude, if no one talks shit to you, and I know that for a fact, no one talks shit to you.
See,
and if they do, they're out of their mind.
No, but here's the thing. I look like, and I have a joke about this, I look like, and because this isn't being recorded, like filmed wise, so
right.
Like for the people listening, I look like Mr. Incredible when he was in the blue suit and he was and he was out of shape like that, like, but
I wish we had a video pod.
But like, I understand, like, and I have beautiful blue eyes,
there you
okay?
go,
but I don't look menacing. Like, I'm a big guy, but like if it's nighttime and I'm walking, you might be a little worried, but like, you turn the light on, you're like, oh, that guy's a pussy. Like, I don't think I look menacing, and I'm not like a,
you're in the face, but your size is menacing.
All right, but like,
hold on, time. Were you ever like a bouncer or anything?
I've been,
there you go. You've been throwing people out.
I've been asked to, or like, I've applied for like bartending positions and they were like, well, do you want to bounce? And I'm like, no, cause I got to stand in the cold.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's funny.
Wait, so you've never bounced though?
Never actually bounced.
Okay.
No.
What were you saying though?
No, like a kid I work with like a month ago, I was complaining about how like, I can't, like, there's no size. Like, I'm not a size. Like, there's, cause like an extra large is like someone that's my height and a little bit like not as broad.
All right, well, let's go through it. How tall are you?
For the ladies out there, we'll say I'm 6'3".
Okay, a 6'3" rugby player. Yeah, no, dude, you could beat 85% of the population.
Are you?
You can beat their ass. 85% of the human population, you could wreck them.
I was making jokes earlier, but I think you actually might want to fuck me, dude. And that's the thing. Like, I'm not, just because you are big doesn't mean you know how to fight. Like,
no, that's true.
There was one time I was at Syracuse and I was walking with a girl and I thought I was going to go home with her. And there was this drunk dude in the street, like, being an asshole. And she was like, you need to do something. Cause he was like yelling at both of us. And I'm the kind of guy that's just like, just fucking let him be drunk again.
No, right.
And
yeah.
Maybe he gets hit by a car and then the problem's solved. So, like, we're, you know, going back and forth, and he's like, well, what are you gonna do, man? Fucking square up. And I literally pushed the girl in front of me as like a barrier, and I was like, that's what I'm doing. I don't want to, I'm not a fighter. I'm, you know,
right. I'm not either. Well, it's funny too. I have zero official fights, but I did two years of kickboxing. I don't know if you heard any of those episodes. Mm-mm. But you know, I did, you know, you spar with these, and then a lot of times there's legit fighters in the gym. And dude, the first lesson that I learned from doing kickboxing and Muay Thai is that, dude, the people in there that could absolutely fuck you up are the nicest people I've ever met. They're so nice. And it's crazy. I mean, I guess it makes sense, because it's like, yeah, you can, when you know jiu-jitsu and can kick that hard and can elbow and punch that hard, like, yeah, I guess you're going to be nice. But it's always the opposite of what you think, you know, because before I started doing kickboxing, I thought people like that would be douchebags or like bullies. And it's not usually the case.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm obviously stronger than most people, but like, I don't know how to use it. Also, like, if some dude that was half your size that had actual training, he'd kick my ass.
Right.
Hands down. Yeah. So, yeah, totally.
But so you never played football or anything?
I think I talked about this at Bombers the night I met you, and then you and Tyler left.
I think you missed
my set, you asshole.
I think as Tyler was giving me notes, you were doing your set.
Yeah, that's fine. No, so basically I played 1 year of football. I was second grade, and because I've always been big, I was a 13-pound baby when I was born.
Okay.
So I'm fucking just whatever. And I was in second grade, and I was playing with like fourth and fifth graders because it was by weight. So I didn't know these kids and everything. And obviously they stuck me on the offensive line. And, you know, fun fact for your listeners, I have Tourette's syndrome. So when you're on the offensive line, you can't flinch or else it's a penalty. So
right.
My first game, the first drive offensive, it ended up being like first down and 35.
Oh,
and
man.
Because I just, I had a lot less control of my Tourette's when I was younger. So
right.
Like, I was like, this football thing fucking blows.
Right.
So yeah, no, football wasn't, I didn't like it.
What's it like? I know we touched about it briefly, but what's it like? So you were just born with Tourette's?
Yeah, I guess.
And does that, like, has it gotten, so it, like you said, it's gotten better, like, over time, or not really?
I mean, I think I have better control of it now. Like, I still, like, if I have a cup of coffee, and don't get behind the wheel with me, you know what I mean? But, it was interesting. Like, every year, it would kind of manifest into, like, a new tick.
Right.
But now it's kind of, like, the same, now that I'm out of puberty, obviously. But, yeah, it's kind of one of those things where, like, I'd rather have Tourette's than, like, be a midget or something.
Oh yeah, well, it's, I think, you know, everyone has something too. Do you have do you have jokes about it or no?
Oh, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that I probably have, I mean, I've never like timed it, but I could do a Netflix, like if I wanted to, and I'm not saying it would be funny, but I have enough material for
like an hour of material.
Yeah, like a Netflix special of just Tourette's guy, but I don't want to be that guy. And I know I told you that earlier. I want to be able to mix it in, but yeah, man, there's so many situations in my life
where like you're like talking to someone or something.
Oh, yeah.
I bet
talking
dude.
To it. And like, you know, and then like, I'm not attracted to girls who do a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
So like at the parties, the only girls that would come up to me were the girls that were like, where's the cocaine? Cause you're obviously,
you know what I mean?
And I'd be like, I've actually never smoked weed before.
Right.
So get out, you know?
That's funny. That's interesting that you said that. I guess it's by the way that I dress. Like sometimes I wear like ripped, like black ripped pants and shit. I've met people that assume I do hard drugs, and I like really don't. I barely even like drink and shit. So
dude,
I think
you're
it's
just like a miss. I don't know what the word would be, but I thought you were waist deep in poon. I thought everyone thinks you do drugs. I guess
I'm just a loser.
Don't
you know?
Judge
I'm
a loser. By his cover,
yeah, dude. Right. right? But it's a good topic to discuss. So you know, everyone has something. I still have it, but when I was in middle school, I had really, really, really bad OCD. Mm-hmm. And you might have heard, I have some jokes on it, but yeah, man, before I went to therapy, man, I remember I was crying because you just do the dumbest shit
pussy
all day. Like dude, I literally used to tap shit all day just because you thought, like, in your brain, like, you think you're gonna die if you don't tap something. It's so stupid. But that is something for me, it's over the years, it's gotten better and better and better. But yeah, man, everyone's got something. And I guess comedy is a way to cope with all that shit. Do you look at comedy as, like, I guess it is both, but I guess it's like a way to cope with something, but it's also like fun, it's also passion. It's like all of that in one.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, there is no better feeling than when a joke hits and the whole crowd laughs. Like, sure. I can't even, like yeah. I probably sound like a psychopath now, but, like, it really is the best feeling that I've ever, and I'm not a virgin, is the best feeling I've ever had. But, like, yeah, and it is a way, like, I, you know, like I talked about with my dad and, you know, being able to write those jokes. And, you know, last year, I still have people coming up to me and they're like, hey, man, how's your ex-girlfriend? Because I had this huge, like, mic drop set where I talked about my ex and her crazy now fiance and, like, all this stuff. But it was basically a way for me to kind of cope with those feelings and still be able to put a comedic twist on it. So yeah, it's a hobby. It's also free therapy.
Oh yeah.
And I think to be a comedian, you have to be fucked in the head. That's why, like,
right.
You know, like, Robin Williams killed himself, and not all of us are fucking depressed, but, like, you know, I struggle with depression and, you know,
right.
You know,
well, I think it's one of those things where it's, cause don't get me wrong, dude, who doesn't want to be funny? Everyone wants to be funny. But I think, in my opinion, it takes for you to actually write something, get in your car, drive there and go on a fucking stage for the first time ever in front of strangers, bomb, and then do it all over again. Yeah. You either A, have to be, have something going on in your head, or B, you have to be going through something really tough. I mean, we're all going through something, but I think it's like a combination of all that. Like, dude, to go on stage, man, it takes a lot, I think, at least.
Yeah, and that's why most people don't do it. And I'm sure, you know, people come up to you, oh my God, like, how do you do it? I couldn't get on stage and do that.
Isn't that crazy how people say that? Because then, like, knowing what we know now, you know?
Yeah, you're like, dude, how many times, like, I think, like, honestly, I think, and you know Drew Harrison, I think he's one of the funniest dudes in Wilmington, but, like, I've seen him do sets where it doesn't go well, and then I've seen him make minor tweaks on it, and then it's fucking hilarious.
Right,
and it's
yeah.
Like, that's the craft, and that's what's kind of, like, what kind of sucks about Wilmington is there's not a lot of open mic opportunities to work on it, so it's kind of like every week at Dead Crow is like a showcase.
Right.
So, like, yeah, but you just have to grow a set of balls and do it. Because if you can do a 5-minute open mic set and survive, which you will,
yeah,
you know, go skydiving, go play the lottery, do something.
Yeah. Joe LaFever gave me some good advice the other night. We were at the Bottega and he goes, we were talking about when your sets don't go well, and he goes, dude, just the best advice anyone has ever given me is just it's gonna end, like, eventually. You know what I'm saying? Which is, like, that seems very elementary, but when you get that, you're like, you just have to tell yourself, like, that light will go on. I promise you that light will go on. And then you'll say, thank you, that's my time, and you'll get off. So it's like, you have to just, that's another thing too, man. I can always tell how experienced someone is in comedy simply by just how relaxed they are on stage. Like, you're definitely more relaxed than I am. And I mean, you've just been doing it longer. A lot of, like, Drew Harrison, so relaxed. Yeah. Joe LaFever, so relaxed. Yeah. Jack is so relaxed. Matt, Brian Pickle, they're all so relaxed. And it's, you just gotta keep doing it.
Yeah, well, it's because fuck them. Not the comedians, the audience.
Yeah.
Okay, if you don't think I'm funny or whatever, like, fuck you. You get on stage, bitch.
Right.
Like, you know, like, I had the balls to do this. That's why, like, that's why, I mean, honestly, I haven't seen too many hecklers in Wilmington, obviously.
Yeah, I haven't either, speaking
but of. But it's just like, it's one of those things where I think the crowd understands and respects. And
right.
just, okay, if you don't like a comedian, then don't laugh. That's right. The best way for us to realize that we have to get better.
And but 4 minutes later, there's going to be someone else on.
Yeah, dude, fucking who cares, man? Like, yeah. Who the fuck cares what people think?
Well, Wilmington is... Wilmington's very interesting because you're right. There's not a lot of open mics, but at the same time, the city of Wilmington is so supportive of performance and art and being yourself and, you know, showing support for being yourself and perform. So I feel like as, and we're this, you know, this group is only getting bigger and better and more supportive. So hopefully down the road, there's more open mics and, you know, we're doing Bombers now. Like I could see that getting bigger.
Yeah, and the real key is just like it's having, and I talked to Tyler Wood about this, and it's really finding like a bar or a venue that has that side room that they aren't using.
Right.
And it sucks because Wilmington, you know, we don't have a pharmacy or a hardware downtown or hardware store downtown, but we have another fucking brewery opening
up.
Oh,
so many.
I love craft beer, but like there's so many venues that we have that I just want to go up to the owner and be like, can we have the equipment. Can we fucking do
no, this? Yeah, for sure.
On like a Wednesday. Cause that's, and, but like that's only going to be good for the business and it's going to be good for all of us.
Exactly.
Because we get to know each other better. We get to work on our stuff. But it's great that they opened up Bombers. We just got to get some more opportunities.
Yeah, dude. I think with the amount of breweries that we have, we should definitely... Dude, 80% of those breweries should have mics.
Yeah.
Is that, am I right or wrong? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think... And the thing is, like, if you hear every professional comedian, they say, you need to be doing it every night. And it's like, okay, well, one, me personally, like, I'm going to be losing my license soon. So driving to Raleigh, Greensboro, Greenville, whatever, is not going to be a possibility soon. So
right.
That's where it kind of sucks, you know.
But, yeah, and that's why, you know, we can all... I mean, dude, it's crazy to me. I've been doing this 6 weeks. It's crazy how many friends you make and connections you make. It's like, dude, we start carpooling and shit. If you want this bad enough, we can definitely do this for sure. Have you gone to like Good Nights or anything in Raleigh?
I haven't gone to Good Nights, I've kind of like, I was slacking off last year when I first moved to Wilmington. That was like my first full year. But Good Nights, I mean, I know you can sign up and you might not even be able to perform. So like that's where
I'm. Great club though.
Oh
great
yeah, club. Fuck yeah, dude! And everyone that goes there kills it. So like, the Raleigh and Charlotte have really grown over the past few years, just from what I've talked to people about. Because I was in Philly and New Jersey for a little bit, but yeah, dude. I don't think Wilmington will ever get to be that, but it's really only like 2.5 hours away. So, I mean, I know comedians who will drive further for an open mic. So if you want it, it's there.
Let's touch on, so like two more things and then we'll get you out of here. How do you, I want to touch on your writing process. And I think it's interesting because, I mean, I try to write every day, but obviously you don't get material every day. And then obviously you live your life and make notes. So do you have like a certain like ritual that you do, or do you just write? Or sometimes comedians don't even write, they just voice record, or how do you do that?
Yeah. So I mean, I have a notepad. I use the notes app on my phone. And I try to block everything off in sections that's like related.
Right, I do
so,
the same thing.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I have stuff from like 2015, 2016 that I've never performed. It's an idea. But what I'll do is, like, for example, you saw my set about the stripper I met a week and a half ago. So like I have a notepad piece of paper, and there's certain jokes or like parts of the story that I know is likely to get a laugh. So right. when I talked about the Bojangles in Buellville being the North Star, like I knew
right.
likely people are gonna be like, oh, ha 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 ha. So Or for, so what I'll do is I'll write something like that in Sharpie on the piece of paper.
Okay.
And then I talk about how the sign said it was a gated community, but it wasn't. It was three trailers surrounded by chicken wire. Okay. So that's something I'll write in Sharpie. And then because I'm a storyteller, a lot of times when you're telling a story, there's a lot of dry parts where you can lose the audience. So I'm like, okay, I need to put something in here to like keep them going and keep them laughing. So I talk that when I'm describing my Jeep, I say, you know, I have a lifted Jeep Wrangler because I have a small dick.
And that got,
I'll take any laugh, but I was like, really, that got that much laughter, like that, you know? But it's this, it's the little things like that. Yeah. And I'll write those, I guess, like anchors for my story in Sharpie. And then I, you know, I have the story in my head or written down on my notepad. And how do I get to each, I guess, checkpoint on this piece of paper? And how can I still make it funny, but also keep the audience engaged?
Right.
So that's how I write like a set or a story. But I'm always like tweaking things. Like sometimes I will record myself if I know I have to say something a certain way,
right,
with a certain cadence or a certain tonality or a pause. Everyone's different and my process could change in 6 months if I find something I like better, but that's what I do. I like to physically write it after I have it on my notepad on my phone. And it's really just bridging all of the big jokes with smaller jokes.
That's awesome, man. I remember, I do, by the way, very similar writing process, but I remember I was watching an interview with Bill Burr and he made such a good point. Obviously, he made a good point. He's one of the best comedians in the world, but he said, because when you first start doing comedy, you have jokes, but the problem for me is, or in a lot of people, is the setup is way too long.
Yeah.
And Bill Burr was talking about like, write your material and then when you go over it again, get to the fucking point. Mm-hmm. What is the point of the joke?
Yep.
And filter it and get to the point, because what comedy is you have to get to the point as fast as you yep. possibly can, because you're gonna lose their attention. So
yeah,
I thought that was really cool. Do you have anything else you want to say about that, or I hate to put you on the spot?
No, you pretty much got it, man. Get to the point.
So then I guess we'll wrap it up with this. You said, I'll let you give, you wanted to give a shout out to you have like an organization or you started.
Obviously, I like to joke about suicide, but, a couple months ago I did a show in Chapel Hill and the one that I referenced earlier, and it was really dark and it was supposed to be a dark comedy show, but like, I guess I was just too dark. And I kind of looked back at it and I was like, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be the angry guy. I don't want to be the really dark guy that people don't want to like have or like. So I was thinking like, how can I still tell jokes while I guess doing good? So I have a buddy who prints promotional materials like shirts, sweatshirts, towels, coffee cups, like you name it, he can print it. He designed one of my headshots with a phrase on it, thanks for coming, which is like just like my tagline, I guess. And I do have an online store on my website. So all the proceeds are going to go to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So I don't really have like a goal. I just feel like, you know, if I can get even just some friends and family to buy a shirt or whatever, just to kind of donate for the cause. I'm not officially a partner, they call them, for the foundation, or I guess the official suicide comedian, which is a real hot commodity nowadays. But I am in talks with the foundation to like be like an official partner so I can use their logo and stuff. But long story short, I have merchandise that really no one needs to buy or has a reason to, because no one knows who I am, because I'm a nobody comedian. But I am, because I'm doing a lot more shows this year, getting more active in it. That is my cause. So yeah, I just feel, and I feel like comedians kind of have a bad rap nowadays. So I do want to feel like I'm not an asshole. Like just because we tell jokes about dark things,
we're fucking around.
We're not. Yeah, dude. We're here to have fun.
Yeah, we're here to have fun. It's not meant to be taken too seriously, which is surprising by how many people you would see take it way too seriously. It's a comedy show. But what's the website?
It's just so it's my last name, Mara, M-A-R-R-A, comedy.com. I designed the website, so it's not well done at all, but there is a tab that says suicide prevention and you can click it and kind of go there. But yeah, it's there, and you know, just check it out. I like to think I'm doing some kind of good, so yeah, don't kill yourself.
Fuck yeah, that's awesome. And thank you for doing that. And thank you, dude, for doing this podcast with me. That was awesome. And by the way, one more shout out. Friday, January 25th at 9 p.m., me and Chris Mara will be doing a show at Bombers, 108 Gray Street. And then it's also going to have Dustin Harris, Spencer Bland, Eric Schaus, I hope I'm pronouncing these right, and Billy Rame? Yeah, see us there. And thanks again for listening. You have anything else you want to get out?
No, man. Thanks for coming, man.
Fuck yeah, dude. All right. Thank you guys again for listening. We'll see you later.